For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is February 6th, and in Derech Hashem on Chelek Gimel Perek Aleph, and this is B'inyan HaNefesh Upulo Seha. So this is going to be getting into things that are a little bit more removed from our day-to-day lives, but nevertheless, a lot of things become more clear when we understand how things work. Now, we already explained, we knew this before we learned Derech Hashem, that people are made up of two parts. There is the Gashmi and the Ruchni. Any living creature has a nefesh. It says a beferish in the Torah. Nishmas ruach chayim be'apav. Everything has an neshama. Anything that is alive has an neshama. Animals, there is something that has to animate them. Nefesh. Something has to animate them. Something has to give them life. You have the physical body. The physical body does not in and of itself do anything. As the Gemara says, everybody has eyes, but the power to see through the eyes is through the nefesh. A person who is dead has eyes also, but they don't work. He has ears, but they don't work either. It's the nefesh that gives animation, that gives life to the physical body. And that nefesh is something which is very difficult to define, because it's not something that you can put your finger on, you can point to, but it is the being alive. Now, that nefesh that all living creatures have, not just people, but animals, insects, everything, has a nefesh, that nefesh will manifest itself differently depending on the creature that it's in. So you can either say we have the most refined nefesh, or we have a body that is the most refined, and therefore the nefesh does the most of us. Now, it's a worm, there isn't much for the nefesh to do with the worm, right? It just can just crawl around. But with a human being, with the physical body that we have, because of the stature that we have, the ability to stand on 2 feet, the brain that we have, the various functions that we have, so the nefesh does a lot more for us than it does for other creatures. It could also be our nefesh is actually itself more refined. But and the Ramchal writes, this nefesh that is true for all creatures includes the ability to, let me just see over here, the ability to imagine, to remember, to think, to desire. All those things are kochas ha-nefesh. Now, not every creature has the ability to remember and to imagine, but the whichever creatures are refined enough to have those things, like us, it is the nefesh that is giving that power, the power to think, the intellect to think, the intellect to remember, to act upon memories, that those memories should inform how we're going to act in the future, to imagine, to dream, to think about things. All of that is the nefesh being poyel in the guf. That is all true for all creatures. Human beings, though, have another nefesh. We have two nefashos. We have the regular nefesh, which animates us, which gives us life. And then there is the other nefesh, and that's the nefesh that we would call ruchni. That's the nefesh that connects us to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the nefesh that connects us to what's going on upstairs. And that nefesh is the way that, remember he described how when we do something down here, it affects all of the olamos all the way up, and then
the olamas get affected, and then that affects everything back down, and it affects us. And there's this constant movement of effect that's moving up and down. It starts down here, because this is the world that changes. The ruchni mystical world doesn't change on its own. It only changes because of what's down here. But the way he described it is that a person is born with a certain mazel that upstairs, that affects him down here, and then what we do, our actions, affect everything upstairs. And there's a constant interface. That interface is between the nefesh hagashmi and the nefesh haruchni, the two nefashas. The nefesh hagashmi, I guess you can also call it ruchni to a certain extent, because it's not a physical thing you can put your finger on. It becomes less and less definable the more you get in closer and closer to the spiritual realm. So the way he describes it is, you have your physical body, the life of your physical body is blood. That's what the Torah says. Ki hadam hu hanefesh. That's what it says in the Torah. That means that the dam is connected to the nefesh itself, meaning to the lower level nefesh. That lower level nefesh is connected to the higher level nefesh, and that is what's connected to ruchnius. So it's this progression going up and down. It gives you an insight, by the way, with the first makkah of Mitzrayim, because it's dam. Blood is hadam hu hanefesh. There's a connection between, dam would be the part of the body that is closest to a non-physical part of the body, the life part of the body. That's the dam hu hanefesh. The nefesh, meaning the lower level nefesh, then connects to the higher level nefesh, connects to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay. Now, the nefesh, this higher level nefesh, comes from Ruchni. It comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And this connection between the body and the nefesh, so I'm talking about the higher nefesh, limits the higher nefesh. Because the higher nefesh, if it wasn't connected to the body, would do whatever nefashos do. I don't know what they do. But whatever they do upstairs, that's what it would do. But because it's connected to each one of us, so therefore it's limited, because we're limited. And since what happens to the nefesh upstairs affects us, and what we do affects the nefesh, so therefore the nefesh is limited. It doesn't have the same, I don't want to call it, maybe it's mobility, I don't know what you would call it. It doesn't have the same range that it would have if it wasn't connected to us. This nefesh is actually broken down to many parts. It's not one thing. We know that our bodies are not one thing, even if you're not going to talk about, you know, different fingers. But even if you're talking about just layers, if we're going to call the blood the thing that's closest to the nefesh, well, the blood is inside the body, so it's inside, it goes through different organs. There's muscle, and there's skin, and there's different parts, different layers of the body. The nefesh also, the higher level nefesh, has many parts. And those parts, one connects to the other, connects to the other, connects to the other, all the way up to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The way the Sfarim speak about that nefesh, they break it into five primary parts. And if you've heard anybody speak about these sorts of things, you've probably heard this list of five parts of the nefesh. Going from lowest to highest, it's nefesh, ruach, neshama. What's next? I have it here. Nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. Nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. Those are the five levels of nefesh. So the truth is, starting with the blood, you have the dam connected to the lower level nefesh, which is connected to the higher level nefesh, which is broken into five parts, connected to the nefesh, which is connected to the ruach, which is connected to the neshama, which is connected to the chaya, which is connected to the yechida.
in truth, if we really appreciated what Ruchnius was, we could probably break those five into even smaller parts. But those are the general parts of the neshama. So just as the body has parts, hands and feet and face and everything, eyes and ears, nose, the nefesh has these parts. Now the way the Ramchal describes it, and of course no matter what description we give, it's going to be limited because we are physical in nature and our experience is physical. So it's very hard to describe something ruchni since we don't have that experience. But if you want to give the ruchni a description that is gashmi so that we can at least appreciate what it is, he describes it as links of a chain. So you have the dam linked to the nefesh, lower level nefesh, linked to the nefesh, to the ruach, to the neshama, to the chaya, to the yechida, to the rivashim, to the olam haruchni. So it's these links that connect us. Each one of us are connected by that chain going up to the rivashim. Now, that chain, if you think about it, a chain with links, so the strength of the chain depends on the strength of the links. You know what they say, right? What's the strength of a chain depends on its
weakest
link, right? The weakest link is how strong the chain is. Because the weakest one, if it breaks apart, then the chain is broken. Doesn't matter which one is the weakest one. So if you add links to the chain, I'm not talking about making the chain longer. I'm not talking about, like, you know, there's chains you put up in a sukkah and you just add more links. I don't mean adding more links like that, because that just makes it longer. If you add, when you add links like that, we would get further away from the Baruch Shem. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about if you have two parts of a chain linked together, but you add another link in the same part of the chain, then that makes it even stronger. If the chain itself, rather than being linked with single links, is linked with double links, then it's a stronger connection. So the Ramchal explains that's what it means when you get a neshama yisera on Shabbos. This is, the Gemara says you get a neshama yisera. The Gemara gets it from a pasuk because it says Shabbos vayinafash, that one Shabbos leaves vay avda nefesh, because you lose a neshama yisera. The Gemara says you have an neshama yisera on Shabbos. That's not just talk. That's real. There's an extra neshama, which means there's a stronger link. There's another link within the same ones. It becomes a double link instead of a single link in those links all the way up to the Rebbe Hashem, to the ruchniyistic world. And that he says that you don't feel that extra link, but it is nevertheless there, and it does affect us, even though we don't physically feel it. It would be, yeah, it's just so hard to pin it down. It would be like if on Shabbos you had an extra eye in the back of your head. Now you could see backwards also. Right? It would be an unbelievable thing. Like, whoa, I could only see forward, now I can see backwards also. Only for Shabbos, then it goes away. Right? It makes the ability to see that much better if you've got another eye, right? So this neshama which links us to the Baruch Shem, there's an extra one on Shabbos. That link becomes stronger, becomes more powerful, and harder to break apart. That's what it means, a neshama yisera. And I don't know if when it says neshama yisera, it means specifically the neshama part of the nefesh. Nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. I don't know if it means only neshama, or if that's just a term meaning all of that nefesh. Because the pasuk that the Gemara gets it from is Shabbos vayinafash, vay of the nefesh. It uses the word nefesh rather than neshama. But the Gemara also says you get a neshama yisera. So it seems, I don't know if these terms seem to be interchangeable. So I don't know enough about the various parts of the nefesh to know whether the Gemara is being specific when it says the word neshama, or whether the Gemara just means the general term. And I don't know. we know that in our lives we have two parts. There is the daytime and there is the nighttime. And the daytime we're supposed to be active, and the nighttime we're supposed to be passive. Of course, in modern times, because of electric lights, so we've kind of moved, the whole system is not exactly the way it was originally set up, but nevertheless, the human being still requires sleep. And when we sleep, there is a minucha, there is a resting of both the guf and the nefesh. Meaning the lower level nefesh is resting as well. Even though you're alive when you sleep, but the passivity of being asleep means that there's less strain, less taxing on the guf and on the nefesh. Everything is at rest. When a person is sleeping, so he writes that even your intellect is resting. Everything is resting. The only part of a person's physical existence, physical body, body is the wrong word, but physical makeup, that is more active when you're asleep is dimyon, is your imagination. That just becomes very active. It just starts moving all over the place. When a person is awake, so the seichel, the intellect, keeps imagination, keeps the dimyon in check, as it should. People who live in a dream world, they're not able to function. Right? There's something wrong with them when they're living in a dream world. We say they can't really function in society. They're not really here. We all imagine things, and we all hope for things and dream for things, but we live life in reality. Because the seichel says, the intellect says, you might want this, you might dream of this, you might hope for this, you might be afraid of this, but none of that is real. This is what's real. What's real is here. So you got to deal with what's real. So I may be afraid that the roof is going to fall down, but it isn't right now. So the intellect says, okay, it's not. So you have to live your life without it falling. It hasn't fallen down right now. I may hope that a chocolate cream pie appears right here on the table in front of me, but it isn't here right now. So the intellect says, you can't sit here and pretend to eat a chocolate cream pie that isn't there. You can dream about it, but it isn't there. So you got to live life without it. So it's the intellect keeps the dimyon, it keeps the imagination in check. But when a person is sleeping, so everything's at rest, the body's at rest, the intellect is at rest, the seichel's at rest, the dimyon has free rein. It just starts moving all over the place. And of course, that's why we dream. The dreams, as he says, are primarily a reflection of things that are going on inside the body or went on inside the body. They are a reflection of either things that we've thought about during the day, or they are a reflection of different things that are happening. You know, there's a halacha. There's two ways of dealing with a bad dream. You know that bad dreams, gotta deal with bad dreams. We'll talk about that in a moment. But bad dreams. So there's two ways that we deal with bad dreams. One way is to do hatavas chalom. Hatavas chalom means to go to a Beis Din and to say that I saw, you're afraid you saw a bad dream. So you say, I saw a dream. They say, you saw a good dream. They tell you saw a good dream. And they're mativ, they make it good, the chalom. And the other way is that when the Kohanim Duchen, on Yantif, so we say during the Duchening, when they sing, we say that paragraph that has to do with dreams. And that's what we do for bad dreams. But the Mishabura writes, when discussing dreams, that there's no need to be worried about a bad dream if there's anything going on that may have triggered the dream. And what could be going on that would trigger the dream? Let's say your toe hurts you. Your toe is in pain. And you go to sleep. That pain can cause a bad dream, even though the bad dream has nothing to do with toes. The bad dream has to do with, God forbid, all kinds of terrible things and people dying and natural all kinds of catastrophes. It doesn't matter. Because the pain in your toe can trigger a bad dream. Because the dinyon is affected by that pain. And the dinyon, therefore, runs rampant and comes up with all kinds of crazy things. And there's no reality to it whatsoever. It's just a reaction to the pain in your toe. And even if that pain doesn't hurt you when you go to sleep, but you had pain during the day, that can create that craziness in the dimyon. Not only that, but what if it's not physical pain? What if it's emotional pain? What if I felt hurt today? I felt like somebody hurt me today, or I felt rejected today, or I just generally felt bad. And then I go to sleep. I could have crazy dreams about terrible things happening. And it's just a reflection of the pain, physical or emotional pain, that I've had experienced during the day, or that I still took with me when I went to bed. So the dimyon, the imagination, it has no connection to reality. It's, by definition, it's not real. It's imagination. And it runs rampant with reacting to what's going on inside of you, both physically, emotionally. It reacts to that. Yeah.
So there's almost like, it's almost like there's never a day that someone doesn't stub their toe, or they don't get hurt, they don't something. So therefore, technically, all your dreams, no matter what day, like as long as during that day you had some type of stub your toe, got hurt, something.
Right.
Like, technically, all your dreams always mean nothing.
Right.
Is that right?
From the Mishnah, it sounds like you can almost always blame a bad dream on something like that. Almost always. It could be that if the types of pains, whatever it is that you experience, are all normal, and there's nothing out of the ordinary, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
But almost always there's something. He really downplays it.
Mm-hmm.
He really downplays it. And you know, that is my chinuch from my Rebbeim, not to be so, you know... We generally don't worry. If a person is worried, then you do a tavas chalom. But if you can get yourself not to worry about it, better, you know, because it is very unlikely that any bad dream has any rooted. It's very unlikely that it's rooted in reality. Now, we're going to talk about, though, when a dream is rooted in reality. So now, the fact, though, is that, as he explains, that during sleep, in addition to the fact that the body and the seichel are at rest, and therefore the dimyon runs wild, Hashem also gives the ability to the nefesh, meaning the nefesh halyona, to also have more mobility, more range when a person is sleeping. Because, remember we said, it is the connection to the body that is keeping the nefesh from that much exposure, that much movement, that much mobility, that much range when it's upstairs. But when a person is sleeping, since our bodies are at rest and therefore less active, even our intellect is not active, therefore the nefesh, although it's not completely, God forbid, pulled apart from the guf, but the nefesh is given more free rein, more ability to get around up in Shemayim. And therefore, the nefesh is exposed to more things when you are sleeping than when you are awake. What are those things? Well, again, because none of us have any real experience that we can remember with the Ruchnius realm, so it's very difficult to pin down what those things are. What is up there in Shemayim? Well, you know, there's a lot of things up in Shemayim. Shemayim is a very active place. I don't mean active as in changing. It doesn't change. But there's a lot of things up there. A lot of creations up there. There are malachim, different types of malachim. There are shadim. What are shadim? Oh, there's all kinds of ruchos. There's all kinds of nefashos, neshamos. There's all kinds of... It's not a lonely place. Shalom is not a lonely place. A lot of different things up there. I don't know who has access to whom, but there's a lot of up there. And when your nefesh is given a little bit of freedom, it gets around. You know, it communicates with some of whatever's up there. You know, if I were irreverent, I would say it goes to parties. I don't know what it goes. I don't know what happens up there. But the nefesh, it gets around. And when it comes in contact with whatever it is that's up there, and of course, it's not happenstance. It's not like it gets up there and then, you know, okay, well, let's see what happens now. It's not mikra. Obviously, it has to do with how the Ribbono Shel Olam runs that realm, which I don't know. We don't know how he runs that realm. But just like he runs this realm, he runs that realm. So there are rules governing what happens over there, and the nefesh can come in contact with various things. When that happens, then it's possible for information to be filtered down from the nefesh ha'elyona to the nefesh ha'tachtona to the body. What part of the body? The only part of the body that's really active at that time, which is the dimyon, which is imagination. Now, it doesn't have to filter down. Sometimes it will, sometimes it won't. But if it does filter down, it's going to filter down to the dimyon, to the imagination. And therefore, it can get injected into a chalom, into a dream. And therefore, it is possible, although very rare, especially for people in our day and age, but it is possible for a chalom to have some information from the olamos ha'alyonim. The only thing is that it depends what the source of that information is. If the source of the information is a malach or something like that, says Ramchal, then the information is emes. But if the source of the information is a koach hatuma, is a shade or, you know, whatever it is up there, it could be the information is sheker. So even if the rare circumstance occurs that a person has a chalom which is not purely dimyon, it actually does have some information filtering from up where the nefesh is, it's not necessarily accurate information. It could be, it could not be. And therefore, it's very, very murky. But more than that, even if the information is 100% from a believable source, it's MS, but the dimyon doesn't turn off when it receives that information. The dimyon is still doing what it does, which is making up all kinds of stuff and thinking about things and your hopes, your aspirations, your dreams, your pains, your emotional issues. Everything's going on with the dimyon. The dimyon's all over the place. So if you've got this, you know, picture this hyperactive child, and then you throw into the hyperactive child some kernel of truth, of reality, it's not going to curb all the other stuff that's going on. So even if there is some real information that's coming down, information about the future, of what's going to happen to you, information, insights into things, but it's going to still be enveloped and made fuzzy by the dimyon. And that's what Chazal mean, is that Ramchal says when they say that e efshal achalom b'li dvarim b'teilim. A dream, even a dream that is filtered down from Shamayim, from a source that is reputable, but it's still going to have dvarim b'teilim. It's still going to have things in it that aren't emes, because the dimyon is still at work. It's not filtering down through the seichel. If you filter down through the seichel, then depending on how refined your seichel is, It might have no elements of sheker in it. It might be actually be perfectly what you needed to know. But since it's filtering down not through the seichel, but through the dimyon, through imagination, therefore it's necessarily inaccurate. Not that, well, perhaps it's inaccurate. It is necessarily going to be inaccurate. E'efshar l'chalom b'lidvar b'teilam. The level of inaccuracy depends on how powerful the message is and who's receiving it. So Yosef HaTzadik, when he had his dreams, and they were chalomos, they were not nevuah, they were chalomos. When he received his chalomos, he dreams of Hinei HaShemesh V'Hayareach V'Achanasar Kochavim Mishtachavim Li. Who's the Shemesh? Yaakov Avinu. Who's the Achanasar Kochavim? That's the Shvatim. Who's the Yareach? His mother Rachel. But his mother Rachel was no longer living. Say Chazal E'efshar l'chalom B'li Dvarim B'Teilim. There's going to be something that isn't accurate here. Yaakov Avinu, who's trying to make the brothers not feel so jealous, he says, you think me and your mother and your brothers are going to come to bow down to you? They all knew his mother was already nifteres. So by Yaakov saying that, he was trying to deflect it, because look, it can't be true. He's dreaming about his mother. Obviously, that's imagination. But Chazal say, all that means is that was the kernel of non-truth that was there, because there was the dimyon. The dimyon was there. It's not crazy for a 17-year-old boy who had lost his mother a few years previously to, when he's going to dream, to include his mother. That's not a crazy thing. But that's dimyon. Now, Chazal also say that the Yareach was actually referring to Bilha, who raised him like a mother. That's another pshat. But Lamaisa, Chazal say from here, E'efshar l'chalom b'lidvar b'teilam. Even Yosef, who was being given a chalom for, which was obviously true, and it was necessary for him to know the chalomos, he needed them for what he was going to do later in life. The whole way he orchestrates what happens later in Mitzrayim is in order to make the chalomos come true. So he knows these chalomos are real, but nevertheless, there's going to be an element that isn't true, that makes it somewhat fuzzy. This is not the case with nevuah. Nevuah is a completely different thing, and in nevuah there is nothing false. Nevuah, which is a communication with the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is not dimyon, it's all going to be true. Now, that's, we haven't gotten to nevuah yet. That's coming up later. This is just chalom. A chalom, when it comes in this manner, there are chalomos that are nevuah. B'chalom adaber bo, Hashem says. That's not the chalom we're talking about here. That's a chalom which is a nevuah. But it's a chalom that a person has, even if it has some information from Shemayim, it is still going to have fuzziness to it. The depending on who's getting it, and depending on the source of it all, it'll either be less fuzzy, like Yosef HaTzadik, or extremely fuzzy, like us. So what's the takeaway? So what's the takeaway about chalomos? At the end of the day, when we get a dream, when we have a dream, it's still, there's no real way to know whether it is true, whether it is completely false. We know it's not completely true. It can never be completely true unless you're getting a nevuah, which I hope you don't, because that would mean you're either a shota or a katan. So today there's no nevuah except for a shota or a katan. So it's not going to be nevuah. So when you have a dream, you know for a fact only one thing. It is not 100% true. That you know. It is definitely not 100% true. And given the fact that we're not Yosef HaTzadik, it's probably a lot less than 100% true. It at best, it's probably 20%, 10% true. It's not going to be, you're not going to have anything which doesn't have a lot of fuzziness in it. But it could be 0% true. And the range from 0%, let's just give it a number. Let's say that we can assume none of us are on the level that we would get any kind of chalom that is more than 25% true. Fine. But still, you're going from 0% to 25%. Well, how much is it? No way to know. So, what does that do for us? We wake up in the morning, I had a dream. I have no idea whether to trust any of it or none of it. I know I can't trust all of it. But is it none or is it some? So if it's a good dream, all right, I can hope for the best, right? Maybe it's at least partially true. It'd be really nice. So I liked what I dreamt. I'll hold on to it. V'aviv shamar es hadavar. Yaakov Avinu, shamar means he waited. He waited for it to come true. He wanted it to come true. So, okay, we're entitled to do that. If it's a good dream, we're entitled to hold on to it and hope. All right. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to hope. Why would the Ribbono Shel Olam give us a dream like that, which is good, but without letting us know whether there's any element of truth to it? Maybe he just wants to give us some confidence. Maybe he just wants to give us a good feeling. Maybe he just wants us to have a nice hope, aspiration, or dream. He wants us to have that. It's a nice feeling to be looking forward to something. Maybe he wants that. Maybe he wants us to daven harder, perhaps. So he wants to show us that, listen, this can happen. Daven for it. Maybe. Who knows? Maybe it's just our own fabrication from our own yearnings that have turned into an imagination. Possibly. Okay. If it's unfortunately a bad dream, that's where everybody gets really nervous. Because what am I supposed to do? Can I just ignore it? Well, I hope I can ignore it. But what if it's true? What if there's an element of truth? What am I supposed to do? So that's why we have this thing called Hatavas Chalom and the thing we say during Duchening. Because if there might be an element of truth here, okay, so this will take care of that issue. But the fact of the matter is that the vast majority of the time it's not going to be true. That's the vast majority of the time it's going to be a zero. That's the vast majority of the time. That he does write that when things happen to the nefesh, even when we're awake, which affect us, as he says, we don't feel it. But there's something that can happen, like the Neshama Yisrael of Shabbos. But he does say that sometimes you can get like a sort of like a, you know, this sense that something's going on. And people do say that they had a little bit of a sense of something, a little bit of a premonition, a little bit of a spiritual feeling. Most of the time, when I hear people say things like that, I dismiss it. Most of the time, I assume that it's just their imagination running wild. But sometimes it can happen. It could happen. His lashon is, oh yeah. I don't want to forget this part. That lepa'amim here ein nimshach v'nolad mizeh davar morgash v'nikar b'seichel ha'adam l'achshavta. When things happen to the nefesh, you're not going to know about it. El lepa'amim al saramiut. Sometimes a very little bit you can. And this is what it means when Chazal say, "Afagav diihu lo chazay," even though he didn't see it, "Mazay chazay," his mazel saw it. What does that mean? His mazel saw it. So this is referring to the Gemara says it regarding Daniel, who was with Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi, and Daniel saw a chazon. He saw a vision, and he said, "I saw it, but ha'anoshim ashehayu iti lo." They didn't see it. Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi did not see it. They were unable to see it. Only Daniel could see it. But they ran and hid. So the Gemara says, if they didn't see it, why did they run and hide? So the Gemara says, even though they didn't see it, but their mazel saw it. Meaning they were able to sense something that was going on with their nefesh, the nefesh ha'oyona. That there was something they were able to perceive. Now that we're talking about Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, who are Nevi'im. So even they couldn't actually see it, but they sensed something, and they got scared. So that can happen. There could be some slight feeling that could have some emes to it. I'm talking about when a person is awake. That could affect the person. There is that, because we are connected all the way upstairs. So things can happen. But generally speaking, we don't really experience physically what's happening to our nefesh. Yeah.
What about when sometimes people say, like, oh, they had a dream that, like, I mean, sometimes you hear a story and someone said they had a dream and someone appeared, like, somebody appeared to them.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's always going to have some element of falsehood. Now, it could be that when it's a relative, so then it could be that we all have a more powerful connection to a relative that was nifter. And therefore, there might be more truth to it.
But is there still going to be an element of falsehood to it? So, I mean, is there something in that conversation that they had with their relative who was nifter? Like that, like if someone had like a dream, I mean, I'm not talking about myself, but someone had a dream that like they had with a relative and they had a conversation. So there's going to be something in that conversation that's false?
I don't know if it's the conversation or if it's the circumstances. You know, who knows? Who knows? The Gemara says, "Afilu bala chalamos ba." Even if bala chalamos comes and says to you that someone comes to you in a dream and says there's money under a particular place, hidden in a particular place. This is how much it is. It's $1,000 in cash. It's 10 $100 bills, and it's located behind the third brick in your living room, and it belongs to a particular tzedakah. It belongs to the Atlanta Scholars Kollel, and you go and you take out the brick and you find $1,000, 10 $100 bills. You can keep it. You do not need to give it to the tzedakah, because we don't believe the dreams. So that's what the Gemara says. You're not mechuyev to give it to tzedakah. It's yours. But I mean, obviously, it was partially true, right? We don't paskin based on a dream. The money is your money. So now, on the other hand, I mean, you do have situations where people, somebody once told me, a distant relative of mine once told me, who was in charge, that his father was in charge of a particular tzedakah. His father was a pretty chash of a person, big Talmud Chacham. He was in charge of a particular tzedakah, and he was nifter, and there were no records of what the money, there was money, but they didn't know where it went to. And evidently, his son said that his father came to him in a dream and said, "Do you think I would forsake you?" And he told him the ratios of where the money went to. Is that emes? I don't know. But these things do happen sometimes. So, was that purely dimyon? He didn't think so. He thought it was real. He felt it was very real. Okay. You know, so these things can happen. They can happen. But they don't have halachic. They don't have halachic status.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.